You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome into First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Welcome to a very rainy Monday morning here in New York City. Take the day off. Stay in. Watch us all morning.
I feel like that's
good advice.
Absolutely,
right? Do nothing else. We'll write letters to your bosses. Coming up on the program, should we expect some rust from Tom Brady, plus Shaq with some harsh words for LeBron? But we start with the big story this morning. Tiger Woods, which had us all captivated all weekend. Tiger hadn't played the Open since missing the cut at St. Andrews back in 2015, but there he was this weekend in just his ninth major in 4 years, doing what most hoped but few believed he could do, contend. And Tiger got close, even leading at one point on Sunday, but couldn't quite hold the lead, finishing three strokes back of the eventual winner, Francesco Molinari. Tied for sixth, he finished the tournament five strokes under par. Despite coming up short, Tiger had a glass half full outlook on his weekend.
I need to try and keep it in perspective, because at the beginning of the year, if you would have said you were playing the Open Championship, I would have said, you know, that's, I'd be very lucky to do that. I talked to Serena and I are good friends, and we're, you know, I'm sure she'll probably call me and talk to me about it, because you got to put things in perspective. She just had a baby and lost Wimbledon finals. I used to just keep it in perspective. And the same thing with me. I know that it's going to sting for a little bit here. But, you know, given where I was to where I'm at now, blessed.
First of all, Tiger Woods may be the only person on the planet who could just say, you know, I spoke to Serena over the weekend, and we should just all assume it's Serena Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Probably has her on speed dial. See, what did you make of Tiger's near comeback at the Open Championship?
Jenna, Tiger's one of my favorite athletes. He's one of my favorite athletes to cover. But I do a Jenna Wolf when I listen to Tiger, because Jenna was pointed out in Tiger's comeback just how different all the interviews and the type of content. I've been there when Tiger has won a handful of majors. I'm talking about being at the golf course. I've been at the Masters with him, other golf tournaments are around the country. I have never heard Tiger Woods at any point in his career say that I was blessed. Like, I've never, and I haven't heard him in interviews right after reflect on other people. Typically, it's about him. It's about the golf course. He reflected on Serena. The reason why? Because he was at the All England Club, mm-hmm, watching Wimbledon, and that relationship that he has with them.
When she came up short.
Yes, yeah. And they're neighbors. They're in South Florida. And then also he talked about his kids. And as an athlete, it's really important, if you get the opportunity, that your kids actually know what you do. I remember my daughter all the time. She used to fill out stuff at work or ask me when they have career day, Dad, like, what do you do? And I said, I actually play football. She said, I know you play football for the Vikings, but she said, they pay you money? Yes, they pay us money to do that job. My son was a little bit older, and he had more of an appreciation growing up playing football. But for your kids one day to finally know that you're great at something that they don't know. They live in big houses. They fly on private jets. They live a life that they have nothing. They just happen to be the kids of Tiger Woods. They didn't know how their dad got that way. But, man, he had them for the weekend. They were at the tournament, and for him to try to win in front of them. So for me, I saw it was so many things that were bigger than golf about Tiger. Jenna, you've been great as far as pointing out. Watch what he says in the press conferences and picking up from that. Like, this is a win for Tiger. I thought he would win a tournament this summer. I thought it'd be tough to win a major because we have so many good young players, and the courses that we were playing the majors on this year, they were not great setups for Tiger Woods. But for him to finish in a position, a T6, to finish where he did, playing the way he did, even getting with a lead on Sunday, I think this is all a tremendous positive for Tiger in the comeback.
Man, all of that is, I think, very well said and something you can relate to directly with kids. If people don't know, I mean, your daughter, when you retired, I'm doing the math in my head, was probably 7 or 8 years old.
Yes.
Right? So Duran's older. So, I mean, she was very young watching you play. So you can relate almost exactly to what Tiger's talking about there, or what he talked about after the round. But the last thing you said, he had a lead on Sunday at the British Open. That was exhilarating. It's a weird thing. It's almost like a high you chase. Like sitting there on your couch on Sunday, watching Tiger Woods climb back into and then take the lead for a major. It had been 11 years. The last time Tiger Woods was in that position, I was a month removed from graduating from college. I wasn't married. I was sitting there with my 4-year-old watching it. And I said to her, the last time he won any tournament, you weren't born. And your older sister was 2. That was a feeling that while I joke about and I'm serious that I've picked Tiger to win every major every time I've had an opportunity to for, I don't know, almost 20 years. I didn't know that we would ever get that moment again. And now it feels like it's a real thing, not just something you hope and wish for, that Tiger Woods winning not just another tournament, but winning another major can happen, particularly when you saw on Sunday, even though it was brief, the Tiger effect. I'm not talking about on Twitter. I'm talking about the other golfers. Like, what happened to the leaderboard on Sunday once Tiger's making his surge? Because Jordan Spieth might be the most talented golfer in his prime right now. And he fell apart. Like, there was Shafley fell apart. Like, there you saw guys all of a sudden hearing the roars of the crowd. And it reminded me of the mid-2000s.
Yeah, and the guy playing with him, the Tiger effect is real, Molinari, the one who, he won the golf tournament. This is not about Tiger losing it. Man, you go 37 straight holes at the British Open without a bogey. The whole weekend, with the weather, the wind, bad bounces, he won the tournament. And he was actually playing in the group. No one's ever won a major since 2009 playing in the same group as Tiger. The Tiger effect is real.
What did Tiger do specifically to put himself in that position? What did he do so much better in this tournament than we hadn't seen him do in tournaments
past? Certain people might criticize him, but the one thing that he did was he gave himself a chance. He put the ball in the fairway. First 3 days leading the tournament as far as fairways hit. End up finishing in the top 5 in fairways hit. But it made him play way back where he was hitting low irons, 4 irons, 5 irons into the green, and the guys were hitting drivers and 3 woods on their tee shot. They were further down the golf course, but it allowed him to stay in the golf tournament the first 2 days. It only led to him shooting even par. People, you can remove the chipping and the putting aspect, wondering, is that a question mark for Tiger? He removed that because he made a bunch of clutch ones, but he just didn't give himself enough birdie opportunities to be able to win this game, this match.
Listen, people are going to, because it's Monday morning, focus on Sunday. But the reason we were able to have this conversation was another spectacular Saturday round.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods leads the tour in Saturday scoring average this season on the tour. With this performance, by the way, he got himself into the WGC Bridgestone, which is coming up in a few weeks here in Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. Like, what he did to go, we talked on Friday, just too many guys between him and the leaders. It wasn't so much the 6 shots off the lead as much as it was he was in 30th. He had to jump over 28.
We were saying another weekend where he's probably not going to contend.
Right, 28, 29 guys. And then he goes out and fires a 66 on Saturday, and gets himself right there. gets himself to where it's like, okay, he has a real shot, and then he followed it up Sunday morning with brilliant play. The shot of the tournament for him looked like it was going to be that bunker shot on 10. I wonder if that shot almost emboldened him to take what ended up being his worst shot of the tournament, the flop shot on 11. Like, the bunker shot on 10 was vintage Tiger. Oh my, like, I don't know how you make that shot. And then on the very next hole, he went for almost just as audacious a shot, and that ended up leading to the double bogey, which is what he couldn't overcome.
Yeah, he had a couple different options on the flop shot. He could have played very, very conservative, hit it to the left part of the green, played for a two-putt or a spectacular one-putt to try to save his par, but it removed double bogey. When you get into big tournaments like this, I always try to tell you, bogeys tell one story, but the big numbers, double and triple bogey and three putts, those are the things that typically eliminate people. To me, it zapped the momentum out of the round that Tiger had. At that point in the golf tournament, man, a bogey would have been so much better at that point. But he took the chance, tried to hit the flop shot like Tiger Woods before. This time, he didn't pull it off, which led to a double bogey. And I believe that just took all the energy and stuff, led to a bogey after that. And it was too tough to catch him down the
stretch. Real quick, on that flop shot, though, because you and I were talking on the phone. It ended, we're going to second guess it. It led to all those things. How far do you think it was from being a perfect shot?
Within a foot. It was within a foot. It was the chance, but it was one of several shots that he could hit. There, people say, well, that was the riskiest. Tiger has that type of talent. Compared to trying to play conservative, he thought he could pull it off. And in getting to those 14 majors, those were things that he typically could do.
If only the golf world was watching Tiger Woods before, it seems like every sports fan is now right back on the Tiger Woods bandwagon, which is nice to see. Coming up, why is Tom Brady so excited for training camp? That's next. This is First Things First.
So excited.
All right, guys, as someone who never played in the NFL, you guys probably already knew that, I'd imagine for the young guys, reporting to training camp has that new car smell to it, exciting and fresh and full of potential. For the veterans, maybe not quite as dramatic, unless you're all everything NFL quarterback Tom Brady. The soon-to-be 41-year-old is reportedly excited for the start of this season. He showed up to camp early. Early. CeCe, how important is this training camp for Brady, given he missed OTAs?
Not that important. Like, it's not that important. I mean, when you are Tom Brady and you're in the same system, you're going to the same place, if he was playing in a different environment, different team, he had been traded somewhere else, it would be important.
Okay.
But no, he's very familiar with everything that they have in the offense. He's very familiar with the personnel that they have, absent of their left tackle. And training camp in the NFL is not what it used to be. It's not the dog days of August. Like, no, training camp is so easy now. You can't have too many padded practices. You're not going to be practicing twice in one day with helmets and shoulder pads on. The lack of contact. And there's so many teams now that don't go away to some college campus. They do it at their facility. So it's so much like the regular season that it's not that important. Training camp, it's important to building a football team, but it's not that important for Tom Brady, given that he is so familiar with the surroundings and the way the game has changed over the last 5 years.
I understand why it wouldn't be that important, but I also understand why he would be excited. There's a lot of things different about this year's training camp than last year's. First, this is probably the first time in a while he maybe misses football a little bit because, aside from the mandatory mini camp, he has been removed from it. Secondarily, like anyone that's married with kids can tell you this, you always want more time with your wife and kids. And then you have a few months with the wife and kids, and it's nice to get back to work. Sorry, honey, I got an early day at the office today.
Keep it real.
And so, like, I think that's a real thing.
Giselle, I got to be there a day early. Well, why? I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, he's going to take your spot? Oh, no, he's not there anymore.
No, but I understand. Oh,
No. Coach called. He said I need to be there early.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a real thing. And you mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo. I also think for Brady, this training camp is different from, I don't know if it's enjoyability or what the exact word I'd put on it, but guys like Tom Brady don't become Tom Brady without creating obstacles, at least in their mind, even if they're not real. And last year, I'm sure he went into training camp thinking, man, My coach wants to get rid of me. Everybody wants this new guy, even though I just won the Super Bowl. They still
and also, so they were all talking about a 40-year-old quarterback.
And so all that, and now he goes into. I feel like
no, he was talking about Nick Wright.
But well,
the same, he was talking about Nick Wright.
I wasn't.
That's what. No, Nick Wright. He was playing it back. Uh-huh. Yes. This guy's washed up. This is the time he hits the wall. Oh, yeah, absolutely. If he's listening to clips, mm-hmm. Nick Wright's on those clips.
I am on them. I'm not the only one on them. In fairness, I watched that Tom vs. Time episode as well. I was not the only voice there saying 40-year-old quarterback. That at some point you hit the wall. So for all those reasons, I would get why this training camp feels different, at least a little different, a little fresher. Now, what he has working for him is something that didn't happen this offseason. Josh McDaniels didn't take that job. He doesn't have to learn another new offensive coordinator. He doesn't have to have a new voice in his head, a literal voice in his earpiece during the game. That he has the continuity from the coaching staff perspective on the offensive side of the ball.
And one other thing, too, is the last time he got out and played football competitively was a tough loss. And you want to sort of get out and the next game is going to be your you know, the first time you can actually have a clean slate. But then my question to you, CeCe, would be, if he knows the offense and he knows the personnel and he knows what to expect, why is he so excited to get out there? Tell me, as a veteran player, what is it that makes a guy like Tom Brady want to be there early?
Well, for one, Tom's really good at this. Everyone's excited to do something they really do well. Like, I guarantee if they were running 40-yard dashes, he wouldn't be excited about that. And once you get to training camp, you're one day closer to the regular season. So, yes, there's excitement about training camp. But let's look at the last 4 or 5 years in Tom Brady's life. You guys think that this year is something different because he did time with Tom versus time or because he lost Super Bowl? No, he's lost 3 Super Bowls. All right? So in the last several years, this is just another version that Tom's got to get ready for. You guys remember when he was suspended? I think he was pretty motivated to come back that year, right? And the year before that, they had lost the Super Bowl, right?
The year before, they had lost the Super Bowl in 2011, so they hadn't lost the Super Bowl the year before he was suspended.
Okay, so even before he was suspended, he was trying to get back to where he'd been because they hadn't been there in a long time. And he was in that debate, who's more important, Tom
or Belichick?
Belichick. And then once he gets the suspension, he comes back, fights that. He wins the Super Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so he's motivated that next season to come back because he's defending Super Bowl champion, and that was number 5, which then people said, okay, now he is the GOAT. So every season Tom Brady laces it up, he's going to be motivated because there is something at hand. History is at hand every time he takes the field now.
Let me ask you one continuity personnel standpoint. I have no level of concern about Brady's play given the turnover at wide receiver because that is something he is very used to. Even no Edelman for the first month. And Brandon Cook's gone. He's used to turnover at wide receiver. He's not used to turnover at his left tackle. Does having a new left tackle change? Is there any adjustment for the quarterback?
Obviously, it's not going to be adjustments. Now, they might become more of a left-handed team. Left-handed team, what is that? Well, typically the ball is marked from a percentage standpoint on the left hash mark more so than on the right hash mark. So most coaches are right-handed coaches, so they call more right formations to put the tight end to the field. Now, because they have inexperience, they don't have the quality left tackle that they used to have in Nate Solder. They might move the tight end on the other side. Now, it doesn't change the quarterback because Tom has had other weak spots on his offensive line, center, left guard, and right tackle along the way. So they made adjustments to that lack of personnel being in that spot, and they'll do the same thing that they'll do at the left tackle spot until they get some assurances that they can do their typical passing game and not have a tight end help that left tackle.
All right, we got to take a break here. Coming up on the other side, how will Steph Curry impact LeBron's legacy? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, former champions highlight UFC Fight Night on Fox. Saturday at 6 Eastern on Fox or stream it live on the Fox Sports app. Time now for us to go viral with LeBron James leaving Cleveland for the second time in his career. Some could say Cavs fans are not taking his departure well. Here's example number 876. A local Cleveland DMV taped a picture of LeBron in a Lakers jersey on their camera to ensure no one smiles for their photo.
Oh, that's smart, actually. I don't think that's the Cavs fans being bitter or anything.
Good.
I think that's a funny little way to make sure people don't... Why? By the way, sidebar, Why can you not smile for your driver's license
Or passport
picture?
Pictures. They don't let
I don't understand.
They don't
I don't know
teeth.
That. All mine, I'm smiling. I look better smiling.
Okay,
like, I'm a better-looking guy smiling. Not that you might think I look good either way, but I'm just telling you.
I understand. Better-looking smiling. But I didn't know that was policy. You're not supposed to smile?
So, license, I think you can smile. Passport, you absolutely cannot.
What do they do? They make you retake it?
Passport?
They won't let you leave the country?
They won't let you see your teeth. That's what they told me at CVS.
At CVS?
Yeah. I went to CVS to get it done. They're like, we can't see your teeth.
Shout out to our friends at CVS.
That's good. Moving right along. Time for some stories to start your morning. Just going to keep contributing. The Baltimore Ravens started training camp last week, and apparently the Ravens are practicing plays where multiple quarterbacks touch the ball. Keep in mind, the Ravens have Joe Flacco and drafted Lamar Jackson. Multiple quarterbacks. CeCe, could they have any success with these types of plays in an actual game?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to really trick the defense by throwing the ball to Joe Flacco.
That's just what I was going to say.
I'm just...
Man, remember the Super Bowl when Brady split out and he bobbles the ball? Whatever you saw from Brady athletically, that's Joe Flacco on fast forward. Like, remember the Mark Sanchez play famously where Sanchez splits out?
This is the problem when you have two quarterbacks on the field, all right? If you put one quarterback at wide receiver, the defensive back should go after the quarterback, all right? But now the quarterback, if you go after him, you know what the quarterback's going to do? He's going to deem himself defenseless and say, I'm not involved in the play. That's what started happening when they started moving guys outside. You start going after him, and Flacco's going to be like, listen, y'all need to put Lamar out there.
Right, and if you
I'm not built for this.
Right. If you deem yourself defenseless, that's a good way to not get hit, but it also means you're playing that play 10 on 11. You're not a decoy if you deem yourself defenseless. The only way this happens is Lamar being split.
What I'm guaranteeing you is the Hall of Fame is not going to take this footage and put it there. All right?
Y'all need to put Lamar out there. Moving on to the Colts. Colts general manager Chris Ballard says that Andrew Luck is good to go for training camp. Boy, we haven't heard that in a few seasons. We'll have no limitations when the Colts kick off camp on Thursday. Chris, how important will training camp be for Andrew Luck?
Oh, now, this is a tremendous training camp for him. But it's also, we have to realize, him being cleared to start training camp. We have a lot of players that start on the PUP, physically unable to perform list, which typically they could be on there from 1 week up to 6 weeks. Typically, they come off during the training camp phase. But for him to start off and being no restriction besides the number of throws that he's going to have, that's great news for him. This is a big training camp for him to get his career back on track.
This was one of the very important benchmark checkpoints for Andrew Luck. If he started out on the PUP list, even if he was only on there for a few days, it would mean everything they told us about, oh, we're right on schedule, right where that was not true, or that they had a setback. So this is unlike Brady, where we talked about how important the training camp probably wasn't.
Yeah.
This is a vitally important training camp for Andrew Luck, that he does shortly remove that restriction on throwing and be a full go.
Yeah, he needs a regulation football in his hand. All those videos right there, he didn't always have a regulation size NFL ball in his hand.
All right, to the NBA now. Good news for the 76ers. According to reports, Markelle Fultz's jumper is rebuilt, and he's, quote, vastly improved as a player. Nick, how big of a factor would an improved Fultz be for the 76ers team?
Listen, it would be like a marquee free agent acquisition. If he's the guy that was the consensus number one overall pick in a stacked draft, that is, we talked last week, how is Philly going to get better other than Embiid and Simmons getting better? Well, he did nothing for them all last year. So if this is accurate, and it's our friend Jordan Schultz reporting it, then that is a major acquisition for them.
Yeah, it's good news to kind of hear. Jordan, good insight. Can we follow it up with some type of video?
You want to
see
it.
Well, I mean, everyone who can shoot, you have video evidence of them shooting. But what this will do, because he's a big guard who's also a super athlete. He can play above the rim. He can play in transition. If he can hit a shot from 23 to 25 feet, it opens up the court and you can play him more minutes. He's a super duper athlete, but man, he's got to be able to shoot the ball, take advantage of that athleticism.
All right, finally, more one-year signings for the Los Angeles Lakers. This time, Michael Beasley, who started 30 games for the Knicks last season, averaged 13 points per game. He played with LeBron in the 2014 season, scoring 8 points a game in a bench role. Nick, what do you make of the Lakers offseason?
This is what you get when you shop in the bargain bin of NBA free agency. I had our guy Dusty print off a list of every player that signed a one-year deal this offseason. Mm-hmm. And aside from DeAndre Jordan's $23 million, DeAndre's still a good player, and they paid top dollar for him. They got him for 1 year. Who are these great players that were available for one-year deals? You can say, oh, well, they should have spent the money they spent on Rondo and Lance and gotten Trevor Ariza. That was $15 million what he signed for. Sure, but he's 33 years old. Like, when you look at it in its totality, like, instead of getting KCP, you want J.J. Redick? So J.J. Redick's a knockdown shooter, but he's a decade older than KCP. They signed for the same salaries, and he's not going to defend anybody. Like, instead of Michael Beasley, would you have rather Glenn Robinson III? I mean, I know he's got a good name, but he averaged 4 points a game last year. Like, Beasley, I will give him credit because he went from number two overall pick, supposed to be a star, looked like he was never going to find his way in the league, and then accepted his role as a role player, and he has played with LeBron before. What do I expect from Beasley, though? What do I expect from most guys who sign one-year, $3 million deals? Like, not much, and if they're in the rotation, that's a bonus, but the Lakers' season is not going to be made or missed by these types of players, Beasley, Lance. They're just names because they are kind of known to be knuckleheads. Beasley, Lance, JaVale.
So, Cece, why are you bringing a guy like Beasley in then? What do the Lakers get by bringing him in?
Well, it's what are you going to pick from, though? Like, you can get a guy that doesn't have talent, that can't score the basket, because it's a matter of, like, what are they getting him? Man, he can score the basketball. He's got tremendous size. LeBron and him do have some rapport together because he was on the team with LeBron. But if you look at all the players that LeBron has added in the last 8 years, like most of these guys had some, even Ray Allen. There was question marks about Ray Allen before he started becoming a spectacular six-man there in Miami. Look at Birdman Anderson.
Birdman's a great example because people laughed at that Heat team because the first year in Miami, sorry to interrupt you, Steve, first year in Miami, man, they tried anyone and everyone to play center for them. They couldn't figure it out. Birdman had been kicked out of the league for a bad drug problem. They bring him in, and he was a key contributor that they found minutes for. Like, that was kind of a reclamation project. That's what they hope for one of these guys to become.
There's also other guys. Mike Miller resurrected his career with LeBron. Posey, man, what he did. Champ, what he was able to do with LeBron. So LeBron's had a lot of guys. Man, J.R. Smith, we can always use J.R. as an example. They threw him in. What did LeBron say when they made the trade?
They said because the Knicks weren't going to do the trade unless they could include J.R. David Griffin was hesitant to do it because they were going to include J.R. And LeBron says, you bring him here, I got him. I'll take care of him. And that was up until game one of the 2018 NBA Finals, that ended up being accurate.
Yeah, so even Kyle Korver, everyone was looking for Kyle Korver to play major minutes, but with LeBron, these players, even one-dimensional players, have played some of the better minutes that we have seen them play in recent years. So they're hoping that being with LeBron, that these veteran players, that they can help these younger players. And obviously, LeBron feels comfortable moving forward. This is a one-year deal. It's not like we're trying to build the world's best building here, where we got the best foundation thing. No, you have LeBron.
It doesn't work out.
There's going to be more attention on these guys because it's LeBron. If he's signed anywhere else, we're not even talking about it. But I think that they'll be okay because it's just a one-year, a rental. And if you don't like them, man, you can get off their contracts easy.
And I'll be very quick here, but the vast majority of guys on this list that signed one-year deals this offseason are 30 plus. It's hard to get young guys, and they clearly want young guys.
The Lakers got enough young guys.
Right, no, I'm talking about
league-wise. You can't add role players, though, that are young players.
The point that I'm making is, like, the guys who have better names that signed one-year deals, they have better names because they are way past where their peak was. Like, they didn't get any great players on one-year deals, but nobody in the league did.
Right. All right, sticking with the Lakers, LeBron James is entering year 16. Still looking for more titles. Former Laker great Shaquille O'Neal tends to count titles. He said this about LeBron. Follow me here. When I had my three rings, I wanted to get four before Kobe did. Now we got four, then Kobe got five. I didn't want Tim Duncan to get five either. So I thought LeBron's process was going to be, I got three, Steph's got three, I'm going to stay in Cleveland, bring some people here, or go to a team I can get four before he got four. Told you to follow me. I don't see it happening because Golden State just added Boogie Cousins. So when I was playing, I didn't want anyone saying they had more rings than me. Seems to me Golden State is going to get at least two more. See, will it impact LeBron James' legacy if Steph Curry or Kevin Durant end up with more rings, or has LeBron cemented his legacy as is?
I don't know. I don't know how LeBron feels about it. I know he doesn't feel the way Shaq does, but that's one of the things that held Shaq's career back. Shaq was really petty. Shaq could have stayed in Los Angeles and won maybe a couple more with Kobe. And maybe why Shaq was looking around at Tim Duncan and these other players, maybe he should have been working out, maybe keeping his weight down, because maybe that's what prevented him from winning more titles compared to just sitting there and saying, I don't want Tim Duncan. Why are you hating on Timmy? Timmy's out there taking care of himself. Timmy was in some of the best shape later in his career. Man, he had knee problems and everything, got his weight down. Like, why are you out there hating on him? Kobe earned those after losing one, being humiliated. He ended up getting two more without Shaq. Now, Kobe and Shaq had a personal battle. LeBron, you can't. I don't think LeBron's going to make it personal with these other guys. He has no control over it. I think his legacy, he made the best move for his legacy and also long term. People forget how many teams Shaq played for. Shaq was still looking for another ring even there at the end.
Teaming up with LeBron.
Yeah. I don't think LeBron's overall psyche is the same. Even though they're both great players, we don't think alike. We don't go about things the same way. And LeBron's career hadn't been like Shaq's career was.
And the other thing is this. Shaq, when he says, I was worried about Kobe, I was worried about Duncan, whether petty or not, those are guys that were legitimately in the discussion for who's the best player of their generation. Is it Kobe? Is it Shaq? Is it Duncan? Like, I personally believe it was Duncan. Some people believe it was Shaq. Some believe it was Kobe. Like, that's a real debate. And so Shaq is, I understand to a degree why Shaq would be, all right, we're going to count MVPs in this category. We're going to count titles. We're going to, all these types of things. There is no discussion about the best player of this generation between Steph, LeBron, and Kevin Durant. That does not exist to anyone trying to have an intellectually honest conversation.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense right there. I never thought of it that way, that now, because Shaq, he had to clarify.
Sure.
Because he wasn't clearly better than those guys. And, man, before Kobe got hurt, the consistency between Duncan and Kobe, that those things put him above Shaq.
And LeBron doesn't need the rings to cement his legacy when you're comparing yourself to Steph and
Durant. Durant and Steph don't think they're better than LeBron.
Correct. I think Durant thinks he one day will be the best player in the league, but that day is not here yet.
Right. He didn't have the mindset that those three had in Duncan, Kobe, and Shaq.
Right. That was a real, like, Duncan is so quiet, you don't know. But, like, I'm sure Duncan felt like, and he was correct, by the way, there was a long time he was the best player in the league.
Yes.
And one thing Duncan has going for him, and this is why I think he's the sixth greatest player ever, and I will always stand for Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan was the best player on four championship teams. So this is something that gets lost in the wash sometimes. We just count the rings, right? So Kobe's got five of them. And kudos to him. One of those rings, he averaged 15 points a game on 36% shooting. But the ring still counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Duncan was the best player on four champions. He has five rings, but the best player on four. LeBron's been the best player on three champions, obviously. Kobe, that's why those last two were so important for Kobe. Kobe's the best player on two. Shaq's got four rings, but he was only the best player on three of them. It's the biggest feather in Jordan's cap, obviously. It's not just the six rings. He was the best player on all six. Magic's got five. He was the best player on three of those. Kareem's got six. He was the best player on three of those. Like, so when we do Steph and KD, Steph's been the best player on a team that's won a title once. KD's been the best player on a team that's won a title twice. Even if they go and win some more, like, it's going to be tough for Steph and KD in any metric, really, to equal or come close to LeBron, aside from raw ring count. Now, raw ring count, I would imagine, if I had to bet money, I would say Steph will finish with more rings than LeBron James. I would be surprised if he didn't. Like, it's going to be hard for LeBron to get past four, and I'd be surprised if Steph doesn't get at least four. So you follow me? But that's not how I evaluate all-time players.
But that's why when you do evaluate all-time players, it gets a little blurry because rings obviously factor in, but it can't factor in with a guy like LeBron, who's so clearly the player of his generation right now. So you can't have the same LeBron-Jordan conversation as far as rings go with LeBron and then Steph, KD at the same time. He's already cemented his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, it's no doubt. It's really hard to have these conversations, and you have to try to figure out some type of angle. If it's not rings, is he the best player? How many MVPs? But that's why I tried to, and someone pointed out on my Twitter, like, you should talk about your favorite player compared to the best player. Because if you like a player, it's going to be hard in your argument or your conversation to be able to really understand other people's point. Michael Jordan and what he did is second to none. Winning three, then winning three more, and all those times being the best player on the court, that to me is the unapproachable. Now, longevity, LeBron, all that, yeah, he has all that going in his favor, but six times MJ was the best in the finals, and they won. And that right there is the stat that kills all the arguments.
So the other thing that I think is interesting with what Shaq's talking about in regards to LeBron's decision, because he says go to Cleveland or go somewhere you could win right now. That's probably Philly or Houston. You got to keep in mind for LeBron the last 2 years. In the last two NBA finals, LeBron has averaged 34, 10, and 10. And he's won a single game. Not a ring, a single game in those NBA finals. I think part of LeBron's math this summer was, to a degree, man, I can be at this level. I can play my A-plus game in the biggest spots. It doesn't always end up with a ring. So that's why, that's where we discuss why his family, why the lifestyle, why all of that had a bigger role in this decision than other ones before. Because whether or not you win a championship, we saw it these last 2 years, is not up to the individual player,
right,
no matter how well he plays.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, talk some football. Well, the Vikings' new offense make them the favorites in the NFC, just like that. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former head coach Eric Mangini's back with us after a little time off. Coach, looking tan and ready to go.
I am good. My training camp tan ready.
See that? Yeah. And you also brought a fantastic nor'easter through the...
Well, you know, it's the least I could do.
Thank you very much.
You know how much
I really
care.
Appreciate that. Hey, if you're an NFL team who came one game away from the Super Bowl last year and then added star quarterback Kirk Cousins, you're probably going to be good this year. That is where we stand with the Minnesota Vikings and their high potent offense. Vikings tight end Kyle Rudolph said, quote, "It's been a lot of fun to see what new offensive coordinator John DeFilippo.
Can do with all. Jenna practiced that all morning.
No, she didn't.
She really did. No, I'm giving you credit. You did. You should have.
With all the chess pieces, said Kyle Rudolph, at his disposal. CC, let me start with you on this one. How dynamic can this Vikings offense be?
Well, I think first fans should know, as far as DeFilippo, what he's done in a couple other places in Cleveland. He had a tight end that can't outrun Jenna. And definitely have that's Jenna can run. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just relax, Jenna. He is a professional athlete. Okay? Like,
you see how
I tried. I tried to include her in the show. Okay. Watch how I do this.
You can't run me?
DeFilippo also got the name right. When he was in Cleveland, he had a tight end that couldn't even outrun Nick Wright.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Go.
Nick Wright's got more ability than Gary Barnidge. Gary Barnidge, man, is not a tight end that you would think would be highlighted in an offense. Excellent job. Great route runner. Took advantage of that offense and the impact that DeFilippo had on him. And then the next year, you get Zach Ertz. Both of these guys end up in the Pro Bowl. Let me tell you about Kyle Rudolph. Outstanding basketball player. He is a lot better athlete than any of these guys will be. So I look for him to take advantage of some of those matchups that they're going to have. Now, the problem is the Vikings are going through a crisis. And you know, one of your friends that you coach with, Tony Sperano, the offensive line coach, passed away this weekend. And trying to recover from that, it will have an effect because the Vikings, their worst unit on their football team is their offensive line. So Kyle Rudolph is a tremendous blocking tight end and a tremendous receiver. So they've had him stay in an awful lot. So whoever they decide is their offensive line coach, they're going to have to decide, Do we go one back, play two tight ends? Because then we can get Kyle off, have the other tight end stay, which I believe will be one of the predominantly one of the sets that they're going to use, because DeFilippo's had a tremendous amount of success, and Kirk Cousins has been great throwing the tight end since he was the starter there in Washington. So you're talking about a perfect marriage between the offensive coordinator, a quarterback, and a really talented tight end. I look for them to be able to utilize the tight end more, and this is going to be a special part of an offense that I believe is going to be very exciting, Coach.
And I really like Kyle Rudolph. I think he's extremely talented. I think in this offense he has a chance to take another jump. I totally agree with you there. The issue for me is how well does the offense coordinator and the new quarterback, how quickly can they mesh? What kind of chemistry can they build? And then how quickly do those two guys build chemistry with everybody who was there? And it's not that easy to just insert a quarterback from a different system or insert a coordinator from a different system and expect it to just bounce right away. And the effect of losing Tony, not only from an offensive line perspective, because he's got tremendous experience there, but he's also got head coaching experience. He had offensive coordinator experience. That's a different type of coach, especially for a young offense coordinator, because he gives that play caller insight that you don't typically get from an offensive line coach. And then Tony's other aspect was his passion, his love, the effect he had on the players, the effect he had on the head coach, and he had this calming influence. That's going to be missed just tremendously.
And it was, listen, all deaths are tragic, but it was also, it was sudden. It was out of nowhere. It's not like Tony Sperano had been sick. If you guys saw the story, it's unbelievable. He and his wife, they go to the hospital at the end of last week. He's having chest pains. He gets discharged, and then she finds him after having had a heart attack this week, and it's awful. And there's the football perspective, as you mentioned, but there's also the perspective from the other coaches and human beings, the offensive line, all these things about losing someone that suddenly and that quickly, and how you deal with that while, as you mentioned, training camp is when everyone's coming together, right? Like that for some guys it's really important, for some guys not as important. And now you have the specter of this, at least for the time being, hanging over the entire organization.
Yeah, and his impact, he had a great relationship with the head coach. For me, when I had Bill Callahan on my staff, who was a former head coach, the ability for me to go down to his office and say, hey, this is a problem I'm dealing with. What do you think? And he could give me that insight. And they also had a personal relationship. Yeah. And then for a young offensive coordinator I know he did it for a year in Cleveland, but he's still a young offensive coordinator, to be able to go to a person like that and say, hey, what do you think? Give me some ideas. Give me some thoughts. Add to that the moderating, calming effect that he had on the group in general because of his personality, because of who he was. That's going to be really hard for them to deal with.
How much does that change, plus a young offensive coordinator, how much does all of that affect the fact that you do have a new quarterback in there, albeit a successful one, but a new quarterback that's going to have to come in and learn the system now?
Well, I do think it's actually an advantage to bring in a new offensive coordinator with a new quarterback, in the sense that the quarterback's going to have to learn.
Yes.
Everybody else is going to have to learn. They're all learning together now, as opposed to if the quarterback just was inserted with the previous system where he was the only one learning what had to happen. But that chemistry, how well do those two guys mesh, and how quickly do they see things the same way is going to be a big factor.
Yeah, all teams will say training camp's important. For teams like the Vikings, it's more important because of the things that they didn't have in place. Also, the Vikings are changing environments. They are not going to Mankato State, where they've always gone to training camp. They're staying at their new, pristine facility. Oh, they got to rough it there. I mean, it's a multi-million dollar. Them and the Dallas Cowboys have the two best practice facilities in the NFL. So now they're trying to adjust to that, but they're doing it at home. It's a lot of adjustments, but tremendous expectations on that coordinator and on that quarterback.
Well, the expectations on the quarterback is what I want to get into for a moment here, because Case Keenum, statistically, if we did one of those blind stat tests, even though you know the Vikings were 13-3 last, you wouldn't believe how great his stats were. I mean, he had 98 quarterback rating. He had a better than 3-1 touchdown interception ratio, averaged 7.5 yards per attempt. But it's still Case Keenum. So even though those were great, great production, I think for most people going into this season, we're like, okay, well, we got better at quarterback. We just gave the first ever fully guaranteed long-term contract in NFL history to a guy. We need to be much better at quarterback. It's hard to be much better. It's not hard to be much better than Case Keenum in a vacuum, but it's hard to be much better than Case Keenum was last year for that team.
Thing about it is, a lot of times what we see, and we see the numbers. Let me tell you about the Vikings and their play calling. All right? Because they did a job for Case Keenum. All right? Because Case has been known. And the offensive coordinator, who is now the Giants head coach, he did a great job. And they had a tremendous amount of trepidation with Case. Even when Case was hot going into the playoffs, they didn't have a whole bunch of confidence in him. And if he had not played well early, they could have easily pulled the trigger on him.
Well, that's what I was going to get to, is that the numbers look great. But we know, I mean, this is a team that obviously we followed all year long and you're very close to. We know that they were not giving him the full menu of options for this, what I think is a super talented skill position group. They didn't have Dalvin Cook. They will have him. Mm-hmm. We talked about Kyle Rudolph. It's not even to mention Thielen and Diggs, who's one of the best duos of wide receivers in the leagues. You can now, especially with Cook coming back, you can go into a game, if you believe Kirk Cousins is the quarterback they clearly believe he is in Minnesota, and say, however, whatever you're trying to take away from us defensively, we can go beat you the other way. If this is a game where you're real worried about a running game, we trust Kirk Cousins, drop back and throw the ball 40-plus times. If you think, if you're just going to play, never going to put eight in the box, and you're going to really guard against our wide receiving options, we trust Dalvin Cook and Kyle Rudolph to beat you. Like, I think the Vikings have as much of a diversity of options offensively as any team in football this year.
But just because you paid the quarterback like Superman, it doesn't make him Superman. And I give the Vikings a lot of credit last year for understanding what Case Keenum's weaknesses were, what his strengths were, and playing to those strengths. They need to figure out how Kirk Cousins fits into their offense, mm-hmm. What his true strengths are, what his weaknesses are. And what you don't want to get into is saying, well, look, he should be this. Well, if he's not that, don't put him in a position where he can fail. And even though you've got these high expectations and you've committed so much to him, do what he does best. And sometimes that's hard to do initially.
All right. Case Keenum was awesome. Coach, we're going to see you a little bit later on in the show. Only one of the
guy. Jim's a Broncos fan this year.
Still a starter in the league. Coming up, can Carmelo Anthony make the Rockets any better? That's next. This is First Things First. I don't know what CeCe's doing. Back here, First Things First with NBA
catching lobs there. That would have been catching the lob because you did the dunk. Yeah. Threw you a lob.
CeCe can pass it and dunk it.
Man.
You're going to throw it up to
Jenna,
yourself.
The last time you were throwing a lob, you offensive goaltender,
I got
threw
that
the
one
rim,
wrong.
Knocked it out.
I got zip it wrong, but I'm done getting things wrong.
Okay. All right, it's 7:35
a.m.
East Coast time.
I'm ready for it, C. And right. Sarah and Nick.
All
here
right,
we go.
We got you, Jenna.
I got your back, Jenna.
Dialed in and focused. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Talk some Mello. What is it, C?
It was just waiting.
Carmelo Anthony and the Houston Rockets continue to claim they're just friends, even though rumor has it they're far more than friends. Rockets GM Daryl Morey said the Rockets are in the mix to sign the veteran forward, while James Harden added that adding Mello would be a great acquisition for us. Sarah, given where the Rockets are right now, does Mello make them a better team?
I don't know. I don't know, and that's probably not the correct answer. Or in what
but there would have to be
for
a reason why. I don't know is
I
not a good answer on team.
Yes, but, and I got no big argument about this.
But I think there's a setup, like, I don't know because of something.
I believe that Melo could make them better. Do I think he can make them significantly better? No, not necessarily. But I do believe Melo can make them better because of the buyout. They're signing him in a minimum. So they're not paying a lot of money for him. He's a player who, if he accepts his role, if he understands how he, which is a big, and that's where the question mark comes in. Mm-hmm. If he accepts his role, what they need out of him, what he can contribute, then yes, I believe that he could make them a little bit better. You add a 10-time All-Star and towards the end of his career, but he can still do some things for you on the offensive end. I'm not sure Melo is ready to accept his role, and that's going to continue to be the question until we get them out on the floor, because we spent an entire year last year watching him with the Oklahoma City Thunder. wondering if he was going to accept the role that he was in. So now, the second year, now after he was waived, and, you know, does he reevaluate of being with a team that, again, has the potential to win? Will he do what it takes? And that's where, I don't know.
I think this season should be easier for Melo. I'm not going to get into the how a guy reacts to a buyout and all that kind of stuff, because Melo's to the point in his career, if we have to keep trying to tee him up, well, what do you think, Melo? Do you think Melo understand? At some point, you know, you either have to listen to your body, you have to either listen to your career, what it's saying. He just got his contract just got purchased, so that should speak to him. But I'm sure he's talking to Chris Paul. And the conversation should go something like this. Man, what do you and James Harden need? This ain't about Melo. This is about the other players. This is about the talent. Man, what do they need? Because Trevor Ariza, Luke Richard, Bob Mute, they knew what these guys needed. Now, Luke Richard, he couldn't do it in the playoffs, but there was a clear pattern, game plan for what they need these role players to do. Chris Paul needs to sit down with Melo and tell him, man, this is what we need you to do. Because James Harden had to sit down with Chris Paul last season and tell him exactly what he needed. And that worked out. So we had all these questions going into the season. Will this work out? They had a conversation. It worked out. Melo, at this point in his career, he should be doing what these other players need, because he is strictly a role player. And they do need his spot-up shooting ability. They do need his scoring. It should be easier because Houston can score the basketball so much easier and in so many different ways than OKC could. So I believe that his role, it should be carved out, it should be talked about, and I believe that he should, at this point in his career, he should be able to do what they need him to do.
And he should be able to accept that. And the reason that I'm optimistic about this, and the question is an important one. The question is not, does Melo make the Rockets better than they were last year?
No.
It's as they presently sit here, having lost Ariza, having lost Mbam Mute, you know, with Chris Paul a year older, as they sit here today, are they better with him or without him?
Even Melo's detractors couldn't say that, oh, Houston, you know something, they're not a better team today if they sign
up. Yes. Unless you believe that he won't do any of those things. If you believe...
Well, they don't have anybody else.
He's the best
available player on the market right now.
Absolutely agreed. Unless you... Listen, I think if you think Melo's going to come in there and not acquiesce to what they need, there are some guys that are still technically quality basketball players who are bigger negatives than positives for teams trying to win a championship. I think that's how some people view Carmelo Anthony. The reason that I will be confident that he will be able to help them if he signs with them is there is a team that would sign him that has better weather, that has the same no state income taxes, that is not trying to go win a championship, that will feature him offensively, and that has one of his best friends still there. And that's Miami. If Melo doesn't...
Oh, let me tell you about veteran players going to Pat Riley, though. You don't see them going down there. Pat Riley got that body fat test.
10%
No. And the workouts are brutal, okay? So you don't go to Miami as an aging veteran in a buyout unless...
And think you're going to coach.
Unless you have a different mindset than Melo has ever had in his career. So I never thought that was going to be a good match anyway.
Okay, well, I guess you have a perception of Melo as not a hard worker because he's never been chiseled, or you have a perception of Melo's work ethic that I've never had.
Well, if you read Melo, you read Men's Health Magazine, he did an article in there as far as the things that he eats and he didn't take care of his body. All right, so it's not me making up stuff.
Well, there's go ahead.
I was just going to say that is something I don't think he ever prioritized. And it seemed like he started to, but I don't know, he doesn't view that the way many NBA players do.
I don't know if that correlates with him.
You can get away with that when you're younger.
When you're young enough.
But when you get older, it plays a part in who you are as an athlete.
I agree with all of that. I think we can, to me, how you eat is a different bucket than how hard you work.
Yes.
You mentioned in Miami, you're not going to get there.
Let me tell you
coach.
Something. You can't remove both of them, because how well you eat, it helps how hard you're going to work from the energy that you get from your food.
There's no question about it. But you can be a guy that makes bad food choices and still be a guy that busts your ass in the gym. Like I do not view Melo as a guy.
Yeah, that wouldn't be real smart though.
Okay, so you can say he's not making the best choices, the best decisions for his overall fitness. But that's a different conversation than this is a guy that doesn't work hard, or this is a guy that is there to coast, or this is a guy that is not going to continue to work on his game. If he chooses Houston, and I think he will choose Houston, he's doing it eyes wide open about who the coach is, about how close they were to a championship, and he would be doing it because he wants to be a part of that. It would be an illogical decision for him to choose to go to Houston with the same exact mindset he had last year in Oklahoma City.
I would wonder, though, does he understand the limited touches he'll get? How they want to integrate him in the offense? Because as of right now, like, James Ennis is not going to be your starter. It's right. going to be Carmelo Anthony. So in my mind, is Carmelo looking at this like, yeah, I get it, but I want to win, and I could also start here. I'm not convinced he entirely understands and buys into the fact that his role offensively will be different.
It's the same thing we talked about, though, with Boogie. Like, does Boogie understand his role is going to be completely different, and if he thinks he's going to be the guy that's going to have the same type of numbers, it's not. Melo didn't seem to want to embrace any type of different role when he saw the team changing last year in Oklahoma City. And it doesn't look
like... He was coming off a 22-point-a-game season when he got to Oklahoma City. He didn't know... This is not yet where he was at in his career. Like, this is my question that I would just have for you, C, or you, Sarah. Why would we know it but Melo wouldn't? Why would we be able to see something?
It's a matter of what we deem to be important. Like, we think that Melo is his last dying wish to win a championship. We don't know that. Like, we don't know that. We know he won't play the forward position. Don't want to do that. We know he's not going to play great defense. All right? So...
Are you saying why would we understand what his role should be and what point he's at in his career?
Why would we understand that if he goes to the Rockets, that you're not going to be the featured offense, that you're going to have decreased touches? Why would the entire world know that except for him?
I think in understandably
he wants to play basketball.
So, he's a future Hall of Famer. He's a future Hall of Famer that's used to putting up 20-plus points a game every season of his career.
Yeah,
and he's playing with guys that he believes that could raise his level of play.
Everyone don't look at themselves in truth tell. Oh, you know something? I need to play a little defense. No, they don't do that. So if Melo did that, my commentary would be totally different.
Got to take a break. Sarah, we'll see you a little bit later on.
Sarah?
Coming up, which rookie quarterback has his team buzzing this offseason? That's next on First Things First. All right, let's move on to the NFL now. The Ravens opened camp up training camp and have a bit of quarterback battle on their hands. Ravens offensive coordinator Marty Mornewig said Joe Flacco is moving and grooving better than he had in years, and that Lamar Jackson is way ahead of the curve in terms of his development. What's wrong?
Nothing. Go ahead.
See, how will the Ravens quarterback situation shake out between Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson? What?
Did he say Joe Flacco's moving and grooving?
Yeah, that's what
he's over
doing.
There bebopping. Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacko, you can go back.
Is he not moving groove?
I mean, back to when he was a blue hen.
Oh, no. He hadn't moved the groove since he came out the womb.
Come on,
you know,
guys.
Joe Flacco.
He was a 2-year-old with stiff joints.
Joe Flacco is stiff, yes. He definitely, when he went to see the baby doctor, they told him, oh, man, we need to lubricate his joints so the boy can reach his potential. I mean, Joe Flacco is not a nimble. He's not a great athlete. He's got a big, strong arm, but you're talking about one of the least athletic quarterbacks that we've had in the NFL in the last 10 years. No one's ever said Flacco's going to be moving and grooving. Like, I keep trying to tell you all these reports, like, guys just flat out, training camp, they just lie. I'm just gonna tell a whopper. Like,
in fairness to Marty Mornewig.
There's no fairness to Marty Mornewig talking about Joe Flacco is moving and grooving.
He said better than he has. So, I mean, if you started out at 0%, a 1% move and groove is...
Change your vocabulary. It's all kind of other words that he could use. Like, just stop lying.
All right, assume he looks good. Okay. Assume he's moving a little. He's moving around a little bit. Does that heat things up? Does that make that offense a little more interesting with Lamar Jackson there?
Joe Flacco or Lamar Jackson? Because they got problems, all right? They got big problems. Flacco is never going to be an accurate quarterback. That has passed him by. When we were rating him coming from the Blue Hens, it was like he's got a big arm. He's not as accurate. what are we, 10 years later? How many years later?
He's played 10 full years.
10 years later, it's the same resume. He is a statue in the pocket. He throws the deep ball well. He's got a big gun. His variance of throws is not real good. His touchdown to interception ratio is not going to be great. So, no, and then you bring in Lamar Jackson. In the last draft that Ozzie Newsome is having as a great general manager, he decides to trade back up into the first round and draft Lamar Jackson. That is not good for Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco's days in Baltimore are numbered. Marty Morningwig can try to put a good spin on it, much as he wants to. He's not one of my favorite offensive coordinators. But this is not a creative offense. They got a guy who is not an accurate passer, and Joe Flacco is the veteran. And they got another guy who's not an accurate passer in Lamar Jackson. So how you're going to put both of those guys on the field at the same time, this is something that I'm watching because I believe there's going to be a car crash.
Yeah, but at least with Lamar, because he's the opposite of Joe Flacco as far as an athleticism standpoint, he can make some things happen with his legs. Now, I know that you got to be careful of that. He's not going to be able to do what he did at Louisville in the NFL. I get all of that. But if Joe Flacco is one end of the spectrum as far as athleticism in the NFL quarterback, Lamar's on the other end. But the reason that I think Lamar will be the starting quarterback there sooner rather than later is you mentioned what's been the one thing Flacco's always done well, throw the deep ball, right? That's why he was a first-round pick out of a small school. It's why that he got the job in short order in Baltimore is, I mean, he looks like a quarterback. He's 6'5". He's got this huge arm. Man, last year, he is nearly dead last in the NFL in yards per attempt. Anything below 7 ain't great. Anything below 6.5 is terrible. He was below 6. He was 5.7 yards per attempt. So he still had that same touchdown interception ratio he's had throughout his career, right around 1.5 to 1. That's not great. He's not going to be super accurate, like you said. And you're near the bottom or at the bottom of the league in yards per attempt. Like, what did Joe Flacco do well last year? It's hard to find it. And so now that this is the last year that he has the guaranteed money on that giant contract he got after the Super Bowl, that's why I think in Baltimore, no matter what Marty Morningwig says, they're excited about transitioning to Lamar Jackson.
How do you prepare two offenses for two quarterbacks who are so different in their ability and their talent, what they can do? You have one guy who's a lot more mobile than the other, not that he's that mobile, but how do you go into training camp and prepare as if either one of these guys can go, or are they sort of gearing towards one or the other?
It's hard to do. He's got one of the tougher jobs in the NFL because everyone has the same amount of time. But now they have to split up the time because they have to teach two different offenses. Lamar Jackson is not ready to run an NFL offense that Marty Morningwig is teaching to Joe Flacco and the other backup quarterbacks. So even the stuff that they're doing where both players are on the field, I mean, that's just maybe 10 plays on a wristband. That's not going to be an extensive. That's not something that you can lead a game with, because also teams will find it out. They're going to find out what you're trying to do, what are the five plays you're doing, and they're going to key on those and take them away from you.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, how impressive was Tiger Woods' near comeback at the Open Championship? Just ask Nick's daughter. That's next on First Things First. She's 4. Time now for some stories to start your morning. The Hamilton Tiger Cats traded quarterback Johnny Manziel to the last place Montreal Alouettes after just 5 games, 0 starts. Johnny Football will be reunited with his former Texas A&M coach, Mike Sherman. Chris Carter, will this be a good situation for Manziel?
It's a tremendous situation for Johnny Manziel. Not a tremendous situation for other people, Jenna, but for Johnny Manziel, you know the reason why? Because he's going to get a chance to play football. Montreal needs a quarterback. Very good organization. My son played for them for several years. Their fan support is very, very good there. So we're getting ready to see Johnny Football. And also, the CFL came out with a ruling last week that was a little bit different. They're going to allow CFL players, they're going to have a window of opportunity, even if they have a CFL contract, they can come to the NFL. Things are looking up for Johnny Manziel. Oh. He's doing all the right things. He's saying all the right things. He's doing well in practice. All the stuff you want to see from Johnny Manziel to prove he has that consistency.
And the team he was on, Jeremiah Masoli, who people remember from Oregon, was playing well, and so he wasn't going to get an opportunity. I think what's most notable for Johnny isn't just that now he'll have an opportunity to play, but that he hasn't been in the news for any bad reasons. Like, that is, as much as his play is important for NFL teams who might want to bring him in, him being able to show up to the meetings, stay on, like, all those things lifestyle-wise are critical as well.
Montreal is the old friend. franchise where Mark Trestman, that's where he went from being the head coach to back into the NFL. So Johnny Manziel trying to do the same thing.
Moving on to the Colts now. General manager Chris Ballard says that Andrew Luck is good to go for training camp. We haven't heard that in a few seasons. He'll have no limitations when the Colts kick off camp on Thursday. Chris, how important will training camp be for Andrew Luck?
This is the most important training camp, even more important than when Peyton Manning decided, you know something, I got to go to Denver. Because that shoulder's been rebuilt, his throwing motion's been rebuilt, but the thing that Andrew Luck doesn't have now that he had then was confidence. So that confidence got to come back with the repetitions of working out, throwing the ball, making mistakes. But I'm looking forward. The NFL is a better league when Andrew Luck is healthy.
Listen, if he would have shown up and they put him on PUP list, that would be a setback. We have all these bench posts, or these benchmarks, pardon me, that he's supposed to reach. And thus far, he's been reaching them. So the PUP list would have been a setback. You pointed out something earlier in this clip, though. When these throws, those aren't all – he doesn't have Joel Embiid-sized hands. Like, those aren't all regulation footballs.
No, well, how do you know that, Chris? One is based on the size. The other one is based on the stripes. Right. The stripes are on the smaller balls in college, CFL, and high school. NFL balls don't have stripes on them, so –
so the point is to keep reaching these benchmarks, throwing a regulation-sized football at all times is the next one.
All right, and finally – another day, another vandalized LeBron James mural in L.A. Another LeBron James Lakers mural vandalized. This mural depicted LeBron looking up to Lakers legends. Since the vandalization, the artist had 40 to 50 Lakers fans affix the mural. Nick, what do you make of another LeBron James mural being defaced in L.A.?
I mean,
like,
this
what's the next? They're going to have a mural of LeBron James.
No, listen, this doesn't surprise me. Because when LeBron was making his decision, and we spent a lot of time talking about where he should go, one of the things I said that was in the pros and cons category, in my eyes, a con with him going to the Lakers is, there is a segment of fans in Los Angeles, nationwide, but it applies in Los Angeles, who are not Laker fans. They are Kobe Bryant fans. They are nothing but Kobe Bryant fans. They are fine that the Lakers have been bad since Kobe left. That they are, that group of people are the biggest LeBron James critics on the internet, in basketball, Twitter, wherever you go. Those people do not like LeBron and do not want the Lakers to succeed with LeBron because they're not fans of the Lakers. They're part of this Kobe Bryant cult. Like, Kobe didn't ask for this. They just became this. And so it doesn't matter how nice the mural is. Doesn't matter that he's looking up at Kobe, which is laughable. Doesn't matter any of that. They don't want LeBron as a Laker, and they certainly don't want LeBron to succeed as a Laker. And so they're going to continue doing this idiocy.
The only way LeBron gets the last laugh is by winning championships. When he decided to go to Miami, the only way he was going to be able to get back at people was by winning. When he went back to Cleveland, people criticized him for that. Like, I didn't think there was a spot LeBron could go to that he wasn't going to get criticized. Now, when you go to one of the best franchises in the history of the game, Los Angeles, of course they're going to criticize. This is just another form of criticism, and it's a part of LeBron. If he had signed with the Celtics, they would criticize him. Toronto, you think they would have embraced him? There is Philadelphia. Like, we think that, oh, yeah, LeBron just goes anywhere. They're going to embrace him. No, the king is here. No, they're not. Los Angeles, there's some other little storylines, and the Kobe Bryant one is real. Kobe was facing the same thing with Magic. Magic faced the same thing with Kareem. But they're just different versions of it because of the fanfare that Kobe generated in his time. Kobe's one of my favorite players. But the fans that attract themselves to Kobe, they're a different sector of basketball fans than these other sectors that we've seen for these players.
And the difference between, like, the Kobe fans versus guys that root for Magic, whatever, or Magic Kareem, those guys were never rivals. Like, they were never, they weren't same era rivals. Who's the best player? Who's the GOAT? All that stuff. Like, this is a different type of situation than a guy going, if he went to Philly, it's not like there's Dr. J fans. They're like, LeBron is going to impugn on the doctor's legacy. There might have been fans that had rooted against him previously, but they would be excited about having the best player in the world come to their team. And by the way, Laker fans, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Kobe fans. There is a difference. Laker fans, I believe, are excited and happy that the team's going to be relevant again. They've had the worst five-year stretch in the history of their franchise, and I think it's the greatest franchise in the history of the NBA. But Kobe fans are a different breed.
Kobe fans do just like me, all right? Just put your flag on another ship. All right? Kobe's not playing no more. He's not playing anymore.
Do you think this goes away if he starts winning, helping the Lakers win?
There's only one winning. That's a parade. That's a trophy.
So if he wins the trophy, gets the title, the parade, all of a sudden Kobe
LeBron's
fans are
only going to be able to get to a certain part of history anyway with the Lakers because their history is so sophisticated. Wilt Chamberlain, he can only get to a certain part because there's so many guys that won so much more and mean more to the Lakers' history. He's not going to have that impact on the Lakers' history, so he will always be a footnote as far as the Lakers are concerned. They got 16 championships.
I think as far as the Lakers are concerned, if they win a title with LeBron after their worst five-year stretch in the history of the franchise, he's far more than a footnote. You have the greatest player ever, or as Chris would say, the second greatest player ever, who won a championship with your team. But that, again, that is not Kobe fans.
Right.
You are asking for rational behavior from an irrational sect of people that are vandalizing murals.
I was wondering what it would take for them to stop vandalizing murals, and clearly the answer is stop painting murals.
Yes, correct.
Okay. We could have took 7 minutes
to get to
that.
It's kind of hard to keep one of those clean in Los Angeles, too. I think that's kind of part of it.
All right, moving on. Tiger Woods will wake up this morning wondering what could have been. Final round play from the Open at Carnoustie had the golf world captivated. Tiger took the lead at a major for the first time in 9 years, but couldn't hold the lead. He ultimately finished 3 strokes back, tied for sixth place. Tiger Woods, now ranked 50th in the world for the first time since 2015. Here he is on what he said to his kids after his round on Sunday.
I told him I tried, and I said, I hope that you're proud of, your pops for trying as hard as I did. And, they gave me some... It was pretty emotional because they gave me some pretty significant hugs there and squeezed. And I know that they know how much this championship means to me and how much it feels good to be back playing again. And to me, it's just so special to have them aware because I've won a lot of golf tournaments, in my career, but they don't remember any of them. And so for them to understand, what I was doing, early in my career, and they've seen, only thing they've seen are my struggles and the pain I was going through. Now they're just want to go play soccer with me, and it's such a great feeling.
It's a really sweet side of Tiger that we're really getting a chance to see. Earlier in the show, Tiger Woods talked about a conversation he had with Serena and how they both spoke to each other. After Serena lost at Wimbledon this year, she said, "To all the moms out there, I want you to know I really tried." And it echoed shades of that with Tiger saying here, to my kids, I just want to let you know I tried. It's this beautiful sort of unraveling of Tiger, and it seems like he's really appreciating the game, and he's appreciating the time that he's spending out there, however much longer he has. What was watching Tiger in contention on Sunday like for you, CeCe?
It was great. It was great to see. I've been very, very fortunate to walk golf courses with Tiger Woods all around the United States, and I've seen him win a lot. I've seen him win majors. Seen him win the Masters. I've been with the swing coach, Hank Haney, and others who coached him, walking with them, and their thoughts on what their game plan was on the golf course. I've walked with Tiger's mom a lot. Walked with Tiger's dad. Tiger's a family guy. And his kids, the only thing they knew about Tiger early in their lives was a Google search.
Yeah.
And it was ugly stuff. What he had done to his mom, all the infidelity, all these things. That's all they knew of Tiger. He couldn't even play recreational soccer with his kids. So now for his kids to be walking with him. And the thing about walking with Tiger is Tiger's inside the ropes. But even if you're a family member, they do have police escorts and everything. You're outside the ropes. So regardless of what you think about Tiger, the world loves Tiger, and to be able to follow him and watch the masses of people and what they say and the accolades that they and the positive vibes that they give to him, I'm sure that was great for his kids to see. To be in a major, for him to be in contention, because for the first time, they could see, man, I could see what all the hoopla is about. Man, my dad's a bad guy. Like, he can play this game, and he could connect with them. But when Tiger came up to him and said, man, I really, really tried, his kid said, "Aw, dad," and they gave him that "aw, dad" thing and gave him a hug. His son had on one of the best shirts ever, talking about the haters, talking about love the haters, a Nike-sponsored shirt. They have all these themed shirts. And where Tiger is in his life, it's great to see because this is a different Tiger Woods. I know Tiger. I know the people close to him. His family has always been the center of his world. He lost his dad. His mom is getting older. His mom does still do some traveling and does some walking on the golf course. But for him to be able to have his kids there and have some type of success, I know it meant the world to him. And it meant more than it would that winning that trophy. I do believe Tiger Woods will win another major, though. And he showed that on that back nine by taking that lead and by making some of the shots that he did with the pressure on him yesterday night.
On the family side of it, on the kids, like, I understand this is going to seem like a big yeah, but aside from being incredibly wealthy, those kids have gotten none of the benefits of Tiger Woods as their dad. Like, as soon as they've been old enough, as CeCe mentioned, to use Google, he had to tell his kids at a very young age, much younger than most parents who get divorced. A lot of parents in this country get divorced. A lot of parents in this country get divorced because of infidelity. You usually don't have to tell your kids this is what happened between mommy and daddy until they are old enough, if ever. He had to do it the moment they were able to use a phone. The moment they were able to use a computer, they're going to find it out on their own. They undoubtedly had dealt with teasing and other things that Tiger, I'm sure, I mean, had to weigh on him. And none of the glory of, okay, listen, there's some pluses and negatives to fame. There's some pluses and negatives to mostly negatives. It's some bad decisions daddy's made. But a couple times a year on Sunday, I get to be a flipping superhero. His kids never saw him as super, never got to see him as that. This is the closest it has come. The entire country was rooting for Tiger Woods yesterday.
Yes.
Like, it was as unanimous of support. The last time Tiger won a major, Twitter was in its infancy or didn't exist. And so I had never experienced Tiger on Sunday at a major in the Twitter era. It felt, the only thing I could compare it to is if a national team is playing, like the women's national team in the World Cup, or maybe Michael Phelps at the Olympics, where it's just 100% approval rating. Like, LeBron don't have that. Steph don't have that. Brady don't. Team sport guys will never have that. You always have someone rooting against them. The whole country is pulling for Tiger Woods. And what you're talking about with the kids at the tournament, the kids got to experience that a whole different country at that tournament pulling for Tiger Woods in the biggest of spots. I know he didn't win, but he took the lead.
I've been to a lot of sporting events. There is no noise like Tiger noise on a golf course, and there are no galleries. There is nothing like seeing Tiger come from behind in a major and take the lead. How people react, man, the support that he gets, like, it's been one of the great experiences of my life, man, to be able to walk, watch Tiger, walk with his dad, walk with his mom, walk with his agent, man, to watch their emotion and to watch this guy do what he's done. He's the greatest golfer that's ever played.
Go ahead, Jenna.
I was going to say, he may be the greatest golfer. Is he one of the most popular athletes, do you think, we've ever had?
No. No, because Tiger's won people over because of his attitude. I think there's a lot of respect for his overall ability, but as far as liked, no, because there's
popular.
No, because even people in his sport didn't like him. So it's impossible to be the most beloved that people even in your sport don't love you.
Maybe over the totality of his career, but yesterday, I think the entire golf world, except for the families of the people who were playing with him, were rooting for him. I know take the non-golf world, the people who check in for the majors, or the people who even more rarely check in if Tiger's around. Like, it felt to me like everyone always has hot takes and controversial opinions on the internet. It was hard to find one person being like, you know what, I really hope Spieth pulls this off. Like, it felt to me like a collective experience of people remembering what it's like with the Tiger surge in a major championship on the weekend with a chance to win it. And it was, I mean, it would have been one of the best sporting viewing experiences of my life had he been able to pull it off. And with 8 holes left, it looked like he was going to.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, how will Steph Curry impact LeBron's legacy? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, Fox NBA analyst Sarah Kustok back with us.
Good to
see
you, Sarah.
Thanks for having me back.
All right, murals aside, LeBron James appears to be enjoying his time in L.A. As for his time with the Lakers, he'll be entering year 16 without another superstar around him. LeBron still looking for more titles. Former Laker great Shaquille O'Neal tends to count titles. Said this about LeBron: when I had my 3 rings, I wanted to get 4 before Kobe did. Now we got 4, then Kobe got 5. I didn't want Tim Duncan to get 5 either, so I thought LeBron's process was going to be, I got 3, Steph's got 3. I'm going to stay in Cleveland, bring some people here, or go to a team I can get 4 before he got 4. I don't see it happening because Golden State just added Cousins. So when I was playing, I didn't want anyone saying they had more rings than me. Seems to me Golden State is going to get at least two more. Sarah, did you do all that math? Will it impact LeBron's legacy if Steph Curry or KD end up with more rings than LeBron James?
I don't think LeBron James' legacy is based off of Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. I think LeBron James is trying to be the greatest player of all time. I think he is chasing Michael Jordan. And I think if the ring conversation comes into play, it's Michael's six rings. I don't think it has to do with Steph Curry or Kevin Durant, other than the fact they are the team that he's going to need to beat to get more rings. And we look at LeBron James, the point he's at in his career, his decision to go to the LA Lakers. I think part of that is about, of course, contending for championships, because LeBron James is a winner and he wants to continue to win. But for him, I think the decision was big picture. It had much more to do with where he wanted to live, the environment he wanted to be in, his family, the legacy, and what the Los Angeles Lakers are, being a part of that, the attempts to bring them back to the type of level that they are accustomed, considering the fact they missed the last five playoffs. So I think for LeBron James, his goals, his vision is much bigger than ring chasing what Steph and KD have.
Yeah, Nick, let's go over Shaq's career. Drafted, right, by Orlando.
Yep.
Right, play how many years there?
Played 5 years in Orlando.
Did he win there?
No.
Was it considered a success when he left?
No, I mean, no.
Okay, no problem.
They made one NBA Finals. I mean, you could they got swept by Hakeem. He was the best player in franchise history. They were a young franchise, but they were disappointed they lost him.
Right.
So,
end up going to the Lakers.
Yep.
Right? Won how many championships there?
Three.
Three? Why did he leave the Lakers?
He and Kobe hated each other.
Okay, so after that, where did he go?
Miami.
Miami won a championship with who?
Correct, with Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, as the best player. And then where'd he go after that?
A whole bunch of places. Phoenix. He went to Phoenix. He went to Boston.
Didn't he stop in? Didn't I see him in Cleveland?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
With the cake?
With LeBron James, yeah.
So it's hard. I can understand sometime when you try to use your psyche to talk about someone else's, but how Shaq went about his career was totally different. Like, it's not even comparable. Like, Shaq didn't have the decision at this point in his career because he was in such bad shape. Like, he was just a former superstar. Like, that's all he was doing late in his career. LeBron's decision-making has been totally different. His decision at the end is basketball-related, also family, legacy, business-related. So he couldn't make a just about... If not, he could have gone to Golden State. And if he had gotten more rings with them, what would Shaq be saying then? His commentary would be totally different. I was just surprised at this Shaq, just how petty he was with Kobe. I can understand maybe Tim Duncan not wanting as many rings as Tim, but he had a chance to dominate the NBA. You should have been working on your conditioning, staying in shape, so maybe you wouldn't be injured. Like, because Shaq could have dominated for a longer period
Shaq
of time.
Shaq should be in the GOAT conversation. Yes. Period, point blank. Shaq.
Absolutely.
Because I believe to this day that if you have to have one basketball game, your life depends on it, you can have any player in the history of the league at the peak of their powers.
You always say Shaq.
Give me Shaq. Yeah. Give me apex Shaq for one game.
But you got to bake in some stuff. Shaq in shape.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Apex Shaq.
Yeah, no, but you got to say in shape, because we can't apex. We would say, give me an apex Jordan. Yeah. Give me an apex LeBron. All those guys are in shape at all stages of their career.
And the reason that Shaq, instead of being in that conversation, is right outside most people's top 10 and behind Duncan, and for a lot of people behind Kobe, is not because either of those players' peak was higher, but they stayed there so much longer. Those guys were both 20-year players. Shaq played close to 20, but effectively, how many years are we talking about? Well, once he left the Lakers, he had one great year in Miami, one good year in Miami, and then after that fourth ring, I believe once he thought, because keep in mind, Shaq kind of betrays himself there. He says, I was worried about Kobe, I was worried about Duncan. Once Shaq got his fourth ring, Kobe was missing the playoffs and getting bounced in the first round. Tim Duncan had at that moment in time only had three, and he probably thinks, I got it.
Right.
Guess what? I'm the best player of my generation.
And to me,
those guys aren't winning. And he took his foot off the gas.
Why didn't he have Jordan in his sights? He's already got three. He's talking about Duncan and Kobe, a guy who didn't want to play with in Kobe. Mm. To me, Shaq was in, at that point in his career, a little bit like Melo-ish, change. He got in great shape in Miami. He was in unbelievable
shape.
And he
damn near won league MVP.
But that's to me, like, every time you think about who is your all-time starting five at center, how many people would say Shaq? How many people automatically? And he should, to me.
He should be. And he's on nobody's. He can't be. It's got, like, listen, this is the tough thing for Shaq. He is the most, like, LeBron, you can argue, is one of the most, just God-given gifts, right? One of the greatest things he didn't earn. God touched him, as you would say, see. LeBron is near the top of the list. Shaq is near the top of the list. But what you can't say about LeBron is he didn't make the most of it. He didn't get he didn't get every last ounce of
his
physical ability.
If we were having a DNA draft.
Yeah.
Shaq and LeBron would be in there. You got in the first five picks, you got to pick one of
them. Maybe Karl Malone gets in there as well. There's a few other, you know what I mean? There's a few guys.
Yes.
But LeBron got the most out of it. And I'm not here to defame Shaq. This is one of the 14 greatest players in the history of this great game. But the reason Shaq is doing the Kobe Duncan thing is because that is who's the best player of that era. Like, and I would say it goes, I would say it goes Duncan, Kobe, Shaq, even though Shaq was at his peak was the best. There is, to circle back to your point, ain't nobody who wants to be honest debating who's the best player of the era, LeBron, KD, or Steph.
It's not even
There's one debate left that matters, LeBron versus Michael, and you can make the argument Kareem shouldn't have been forgotten from this discussion a long time ago. But that's the debate that matters. And if it comes down to rings, then of course LeBron's going to fall short. But I do think people need to recognize the NBA has changed in how accessible the rings are. For a long time, it was who's best player in the league. If he doesn't win a ring, something bad happened.
Yep.
Golden State changed that.
Yep.
And like we have seen in the last two NBA finals, LeBron James has averaged 34, 10, and 10 on 55% shooting. And he's won one game. Not one finals, one game. In order to beat Golden State the one time they did, he had to have the greatest three-game stretch in the history of the league. Like, the count the rings discussion has changed when the three-point shots changed and when the super teams have changed.
And like you said, I would love to hear what Shaq would say and how the dialogue would change if LeBron went somewhere else, that if he had went
to Houston.
Or if he went, then it'd be like, oh, he's just chasing rings. I thought he wanted to be the greatest of all time, and now he's joining these guys. I would never do this. So that's why it's a convenient argument, but I don't think it's one that really holds a lot of water considering what LeBron James is trying to do.
Shaq last night on Shark Week.
I've been cheering for the Sharks. Thanks for joining us.
Shaq, you know.
As always. Coming up, why is Tom Brady as excited as ever? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini, and we're going viral in his first year as the Rams head coach.
Coach Mangini.
Sean McVay. Y'all make me a little nervous. Sean McVay constructed the league's top scoring offense, which in turn led to a Coach of the Year award. And with accolades like that, you want to remember every single play.
I remember plays, but it's something that, you know, you're constantly going through it.
Well, let's see. last year, week 16, you're playing the Titans.
Yep.
You got the ball second 11 at your own 20. 4:24 left in the second quarter. You remember what happened?
4:24 left in the second quarter?
Yeah.
Second and 11, I could probably say when we were going in, we were flipped the field. That was when we hit Gurley on the 80-yard screen after we had on the first play, we went negative one, and then the series before that, we had a, you know, they recovered a fumble for a touchdown when our guard went the wrong way.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
80-yard touchdown pass. How about when you came to New York? You're playing the Giants in week 9.
Yep.
2:40 remaining in the second quarter. Giants got the ball third and 10 at the 14-yard line. Remember what happened?
Giants had the ball?
Yeah.
2:40 left in the second quarter. Tremaine Johnson had an interception. Yeah.
Bingo. All right, let's try one more. Week 5, going way back now. You're at home against the Seahawks. 56 seconds left third quarter. Rams got the ball, third and 20, Seattle's 25. Remember what happened?
Third and 20 on Seattle's 25?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we called a screen and it got picked.
Yeah, it did. Sheldon Richardson.
Yep.
Goff threw the interception.
Yep.
Is that your fault or his?
Well, it was an unfortunate deal where he tipped it off, but we gotta get a better location. But that was a heck of a play by Sheldon Richardson. That was a killer right there.
That is impressive. That's impressive. I would have been like, who are we playing? Coach?
You remember those plays in the winning season.
The big plays.
The big plays in the winning season. And then if you have a couple of those losing seasons, those get burned in your memory too.
For a long time.
A long time.
I do like how he added a little sauce to that first one. He was like, after second 11, the 80-yard screen to Gurley. And he's like, yeah, we went negative one on the first play. He didn't have to remember anything for that one. It's just second 11. He had to go negative one on the first play. Like, he had, that was... But do you think that's from, like, the off-season film study of having rewatched everything or the real-time memory?
It's a combination of remembering in real time. It's also after the game going over the call sheet. It also comes from after the game you watch the video. And then in the off-season when you start replaying stuff, that's the reason why you can recall stuff
like that.
But
do most coaches, would they have that recollection? Do they know the plays like that?
I can recall
most, or is there something
special? I can recall most plays, the down and distance, the yards gained, formations, and everything. I can recall most of those things. So I would expect coaches to be able to recall most of them.
Yeah, and all three of those plays were impact plays and
yes.
very important plays in the game. And look, you spend so much time and effort putting this together and then the analysis afterwards, and you go through it with the players. It's stuck in your memory forever.
Yep.
And I've done a few of them interviews like that. They give you some lobs too, Jenna. That's when the ball's by the rim, and that's when you help the ball in the rim. So I don't believe Brian Gumbel was throwing curveballs at him.
It's like a workout. I could tell you every single thing I did in a workout, no matter how far back it is. That's what you mean by the lob.
Can you really do that?
Yes, I really can. That
but
really
it's
can.
Not a lob. You can't throw a lob to yourself.
We saw DeMar DeRozan,
DeRozan did it.
Right off the backboard. It would have been nice if Gumbel had thrown in. All right, so it's second and eight, this time down in distance. And it was a 3-yard run up the middle. See if he could have remembered one of those because it was 80-yard screen. It was an interception.
Anyway.
He's there to make people look good.
Yeah,
compared to the other way.
Right.
Where people don't think you're there to make them look good.
What? I did that?
No. We'll explain after.
What?
CeCe's always here to make you look good. That was his point.
Thank you.
No
filed
problem.
Under Where Did the Summer Go? Training camp is underway this week for the young guys. Training camp has that new car, fresh car scent, that exciting, fresh, full of potential smell to it for the veterans. Maybe not as dramatic unless, of course, you are all everything NFL quarterback Tom Brady. The soon-to-be 41-year-old is reportedly so excited for the start of the season, he showed up to camp early. Coach, how important is this training camp for a guy like Brady, who basically knows every little thing that's going to happen in training camp?
Yeah, I don't know if he really showed up early. Typically, you have the rookies and quarterbacks report early. Like, that's their reporting date. So it's not like they gave him a choice. Hey, Tom, do you want to be here or not? And you'll see that around the league. Is he that excited? Yeah, you know, you just come off vacation. You've been with the family. You've had a great time. And then you know that you're about to start this 26-mile marathon that you can't get off. There is a level of excitement for all the challenges that are coming, but you also know that you're starting a very long and arduous process. Yeah.
What is the bigger adjustment for Brady, in your opinion, this offseason? The bigger adjustment he's going to have to make this season, I should say, after this offseason. The loss of Cooks, Amendola, and Lewis. He's the number one wide receiver last year, and then two nice complimentary guys. I know Lewis, running back, caught a lot of balls. Or the loss of his left tackle.
Well, the greatest thing that happened to Tom is keeping Josh McDaniels and keeping Dante Scarnecchia. Losing those two guys, to me, would have been bigger than mm-hmm. losing any of those players, because for Tom at this point to have to adjust to new people in those key positions, I think would have been a lot more challenging. Tom is used to cycling through wide receivers, and there'll be a bunch of guys that'll pop up in New England that either are recycled or young and emerging, and that's just the way it is.
And a lot of their receivers are the same type, so they run the same type of routes, they have the same type of body language, so they're easier to figure out. Brandon Cooks is a little bit different. He has that fast twitch. He's really short, but Tom is used to throwing to short guys, so that wasn't a big adjustment for him, but him being familiar with the types of receivers that they bring in, I think the adjustment that Tom is making in this training camp would be Sony Michel. Like, how are they going to utilize the rookie from the University of Georgia coming out of the backfield compared to being a running back? I believe his impact in his rookie year will be more as a catch receiver out of the backfield, mismatches on linebackers and safeties. And Tom, seeing him in live action and starting to build some chemistry with Sony Michel, I believe, is one of the emphasis of this training camp.
Well, the Sony Michel thing's interesting. I pointed at you when you said it because I was going to bring it up. It is rare for the Patriots and Bill Belichick to use a first-round pick on that position in particular. And we remember going into the draft, we knew without question the Patriots are definitely getting a backup quarterback. Well, they could have right there, and they didn't. They could have really at any point in the first couple rounds, and they didn't. The fact that they let Deion Lewis walk, they let Danny Amendola walk, and then they target a guy like that who I'm sure, listen, I know they'll hand him the football, but I think he will make more of an impact as a pass catcher, and you saw that ability at Georgia. That is one of the underrated offseason moves they made, because the Patriots tend to think, listen, we can find our running Mike Gillisley. You don't want him in Buffalo. We can take either a mid-round running back or a guy that you undervalued at another place, be it
James
White.
They do that at every position.
But particularly running back. Running back is one in particular that they have a long history of taking not premium capital, either money or draft picks, and turning the guy into a productive player. Yeah, they spent a blue-chip pick on Sony Michel.
And look, Bill's drafted a couple other running backs high in the past. The nice thing about the running back in the New England system is he can be a core part of the passing game. And just by where they set him up, whether he's offset to the tight end side, whether he's offset to the open side, and they keep the tight end in block and they free release him, it's different than the way a lot of teams use a running back, where there's just these standard passes that they throw to the back. New England mixes a lot more things in for the back, which is where I think this guy's going to have huge
value. Yeah, I do think there's two things Tom can be excited about with the season. Playing at such a high level at this advanced age, I know Tom is not taking that for granted. And he's been able to train. His wife had talked about the previous off seasons where he had dealt with some injuries that hadn't been disclosed, being concussions and a couple other things. This off season, I believe that Tom was pretty much injury free in his training, even though he's coming off the loss in Super Bowl 52 there in Minneapolis. The ability to be able to train when you're healthy, it's such a relief as a older player, because it's hard to get it going. So I could see a couple different reasons why Tom would be excited to be playing at this level at this age.
And when you look at it, going to the Super Bowl, you play for that much longer than every other team, and that's hard. Him missing OTAs, him being away from the team for a little while, as much as that has been talked about being a negative aspect to this, there's something that can help you refresh yourself.
Sure. I believe it's reload. Especially when you have that long relationship with the coach, with the coordinator, being away from the game, it allows him to refresh, recharge his battery, spend some time with his kids, and then the wife and the kids both get on your nerves, and it's time to play some football.
So it's basically like life for every human being.
Everyone, you get time away, you're excited to have time away, right. And then you got the wife. Your wife.
That's the two times you use the wife and kids as an excuse. When you're retiring, you know what I'm going to do? I'm retiring.
I'm going to spend
some more time with them.
Yeah.
I don't know them, but them.
Right. or sometimes when you're negotiating contracts, I got to check my wife. We got to talk through this as a family.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank
much
you.
Appreciated. Great coming up, back, what's next for Tiger Woods? We'll tell you when we come back here on First Things First. You guys want to play some in or out?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Tiger Woods finished tied for sixth place at the British Open yesterday, just three strokes back of the winner. It was his best finish at a major since the 2011 Masters. Chris, you went around on Tiger winning a tournament in 2018 now.
Now, I had predicted on the comeback that he would win this summer. He's only going to be able to play in a few more tournaments. I do like where he is, but I got to be out. 2019, he gets the win for the comeback. No, he just finishes top 10, top 5, maybe the rest of the way, but no wins this year.
I'm in because...
Really?
I know, it's a shocker.
Well, I didn't even have a choice to be in or out with him as my partner.
Hold on. But I have actual analysis behind this. Not just because I root for Tiger, but something very important happened shortly after the British Open finished. They realized they had miscalculated the world golf rankings, right? So instead of being 51st, Tiger was actually up to 50th. What does that mean? He qualifies for the Bridgestone. Where's the Bridgestone this year?
Firestone.
In Ohio. He has won there 8 times. Plus, his lucky charm, Chris Carter, very well may be there because I think it's the same weekend as Hall of Fame weekend.
Yes.
I'm not saying he's going to win the PGA, even though I'm sure I'll pick him to win the PGA. He will win this year, coming off the great weekend at the British Open at Bridgestone
I'll
here
give
in
you
a couple
analysis.
Weeks.
That was good.
It's got great history there.
Firestone, those fairways are so narrow.
Moving on to football now.
8 times there.
Colts general manager Chris Ballard says that Andrew Luck is good to go for training camp. They'll have no limitations when the Colts kick off camp on Thursday. Nick, you in or out on Luck being an elite quarterback this season?
An elite quarterback is a bridge too far for me. I think Luck comes back and he's a good quarterback. But we can't listen. There's only 32 quarterbacks in football. 10 of them can't be elite. It's like 5 or 6 guys.
Why can't they?
Because
I mean, if they're there.
Because then you lose the definition of elite.
Never have we had 10 quarterbacks, but that doesn't mean it's not possible. I just believe in this NFL, with all those quarterbacks in the NFC, this would be the first time in NFL history we could have 10 elite quarterbacks.
Okay, so I'm out just because I don't think he's going to be a top 5-6 guy. To me, that's the threshold for elite. You're saying it's not a numbers thing. It's just about how good guys are.
Yes.
So it sounds like you might be in on
this. Well, I just think we're in a rare time. I know the NFL was better with Luck playing well. I do believe he gets back his throwing motion. I do believe he will have the confidence, and I believe this offense will change. Andrew Luck being back, I'm in. Elite, I'm in. Okay. Watch, right, we got like 10 it. Elite guys. I'm going to have a graph and everything.
Speaking of elite, is Joe Flacco elite?
All right, moving on to Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
Ravens offensive coordinator Marty Morningwig said that Lamar Jackson is way ahead of the curve in terms of his development, but he will still have to battle with veteran Joe Flacco for the starting role. CC, you in or out on Lamar Jackson being the Ravens starting quarterback by the end of the season?
I'm out. I'm going to go out on it. I do believe that because they won't be good, they will, and this is the last year of Flacco's contract with the guaranteed money, they will insert him in, but I just think he's going to struggle. The learning curve between where he was at Louisville and what we need him to do throwing the football, I still think it's a process, and I would just pump my brakes on him being the starting quarterback.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like, tell me if I'm right, you think he will become the starter,
yes.
And then maybe, he didn't say it, maybe due to injury, because of the way he plays, or ineffectiveness, then he will lose it before
the
end of the year.
Well, we've seen all rookie quarterbacks struggle. So to think Lamar wouldn't struggle, like, why would I remove that from the equation? He's going to struggle, and I don't think he's ready for the NFL passing game.
I'm in, and that's partially because I like Lamar's long-term potential, but mostly because I think Joe Flacco was one of the least effective quarterbacks in the entire NFL last year. Not only do I think he'll be the starter by the end of the season, I think he'll be the starter around Halloween. I think by midseason, Lamar Jackson's your starting quarterback in Baltimore.
But how do you feel about Joe Flacco?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, the Giants signed the number 2 overall pick, Saquon Barkley, to his 4-year rookie contract yesterday. The running back's deal is worth $32.2 million, and it is fully guaranteed. Saquon is expected to step right into the starting role. Nick, you in or out on Saquon Barkley being the most impactful rookie this season?
Tough to be super impactful on a team that I think is going to struggle to win more than 6 or 7 games. I think he'll be outstanding, but I'm out. I think the guy we talked about earlier, Sony Michel, could have more impact as a running back even on a winning team with New England. So I'm out. Nothing against Saquon.
I believe Saquon's going to have a tremendous year, but we have too many quarterbacks taking over teams. Anytime you have a new franchise or potential quarterback, you got to be in on them. So I got to be out on Barkley. But I believe he's going to have 1,100 yards rushing.
Okay. And finally, Shark Week officially kicked off yesterday. Big-name stars like Shaq, Aaron Rodgers, Rob Gronkowski all braved the waters to swim with some of the most dangerous animals in the world. So, Nick, you in or out on
participating
in Shark Week?
I'm out. Oh, what? No, I'll watch it. I do like how our graphics gave C one picture with goggles and one without. I like that, but I am out on me participating. I'm totally in on CC participating, especially this goggled CC behind
me. With a shark behind CC.
No, because I'm in on Shark Week. I mean, I'm totally in. I mean, I'm captivated. I'm recording all the shows and everything. But they didn't ask me if I was in a cage.
They said, how else are you going to participate? Are you going to go free swim?
Free... Fios TV. DVR. That's how I participate. I'm not getting in the water. Like, I've already done all my superhero stuff. Y'all tell me what y'all have done as a superhero. Y'all tell me. I've already qualified.
Cheating. I'm not cheating. That's a participant.
There is no doubt.
Wait, did he put
that
yes? You put
go.
Yes?
We got to go. He said in. I mean, there's no doubt. Really. We got to go.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.